I'm going to make a shameless plug before I get started. Saturday evening is New Year's Eve. If you have nothing better to do, you are welcome to hang out with Carrie and I. We're going to have a little party going on over in the fellowship hall, and it's going to start around 9 o'clock. It's a safe place to be. So if you'd like to come, just enjoy some food and fellowship and games and doing things together. And then we're going to sing the new year in and have a little devotional and some prayer time as the new year comes. So if you'd like to join us on Saturday, I really would encourage you to think about that. If you've got other plans, I fully understand. But if you don't, I'd love to have you come and just spend an evening with us here. It is Christmas Day. And some of you have already opened some presents. I know one family already announced they've already done their whole Christmas already. And that's great. Others, you know, kind of did the stocking things and maybe you'll do some of the presents afterwards. Christmas Day is just a wonderful time to be together. And it's not any more holy than any other day, but it is one of the times when we're allowed to reflect publicly on how much we love Jesus and feel some of the anger that sometimes happens the rest of the year. So it's a great day for those of us who just love to wear the name Christian. Maybe you spent some of the last few days with family and friends. Carrie and I have. We were up in Michigan with most of our kids and our grandkids, and got a chance to have kind of an early Christmas with all of them. Maybe you've gone to some parties, or you've been watching some of your favorite Christmas movies. Not that anybody cares. Mine is Muppet Christmas Carol. I think it's fantastic. I watch it every year. But what do I know? What I do know is that the word Christmas was invented to celebrate Christ. I know that. So whatever your theological leanings may be, the word itself has a proclamation about the birth or the coming of the Messiah, the Christ. And today I want to just spend a little time centering around that time. God tells us through Luke that the Caesar had decided he wanted to know what was the population of the Roman Empire. And in order to do that, every family had to participate in the census, and you did it by going to the family home, so to speak. The town of the family home. Let me put it that way. Joseph and Mary have already had a very difficult beginning. Obviously, she has been impregnated by the Holy Spirit. We know that the Holy Spirit came upon her and that Jesus would be born through her. Joseph had other thoughts and thought that wasn't going to work. God stepped in, told him, yes, all of that is true. Take her to be your wife, but don't know her, don't have relations with her until after the baby is born. Well, Joseph, since he has taken Mary to be his wife, is from the lineage of King David, and David's home is Bethlehem. Okay? That's where Jesse was when we meet David as he would become the king. And so he has to make this trek from Nazareth up in Galilee down to Bethlehem in Judea. But most likely, being very devout Jewish people, even though as the crow flies, it would be much easier to go right through Samaria and get down there, there was issues that generally caused most Israelites who lived up in Galilee to cross over at the Decapolis area, the Sea of Galilee, come down on the far side, two of those 12 tribes had once lived, come back through the Jordan River towards Jericho, to Jerusalem, and then on to Bethlehem. That adds like 30 miles to your trip. Now, before you say that's nothing, I have a picture of this person playing Mary being led on a donkey. I'm going to hope that's the case. The Bible doesn't even tell me what their mode of transportation was. If they did the route that I just explained, we're looking at between 90 and 100 miles on foot. And even if you're riding some animal and your husband is guiding or walking, I'm going to guess after mile one, but maybe a little longer than that, it would be uncomfortable when you're 9 months pregnant. And it's clippity-cloppity-clippity-cloppity down the road for 100 miles. This is not an easy situation that is going on. And we come to Bethlehem. And there we get told to us through Luke these words. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to their firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. That trip came to a point where they finally make it down to Bethlehem. But Joseph isn't the only person that has to go to the city of David, has to go to Bethlehem to be registered. He's got a long trek to get down there. But by the time he gets there, oh, little town of Bethlehem is filled up. And so when he goes to the inn of Bethlehem, not the Holiday Inn, but close enough for that day and age, he knocks on the door only to be told, there is no place for you here. Having traveled all of those miles, about to give birth, Jesus is born, frankly, in a barn, a stabled area with animals. He is laid in a feeding trough after Joseph plays midwife. There is no way that that scene fits anybody's concept. I can guarantee, I'm not God, so I maybe shouldn't use the word guarantee, but I think I could guarantee Mary didn't have this as the ideal place to have her firstborn child. I can pretty much guarantee that. I would guess that when that census was given and they had to go, I'm guessing that there would have been some thought of, well, can you just go for us and I can stay here with Mom? Look at me. I'm busting out all over the place. How do you expect me to go down there? What would happen if I have the baby along the way? Can't you just go, Joseph, please? Now, that's a totally Jeffrey story, but somehow it seems real in my head. Okay? But they are a family. Therefore, the family has to go to be registered. They get down there. She has the baby. No place to stay but a barn, a stabled area. Why would God choose to come through the form of Jesus to one, a not well-off family, to two, at a very difficult time as far as pregnancy is concerned, to be traveling, and three, to end up not around Mom and Dad and everybody having a big baby shower party for you, but to come with nothing but your husband, your mom, and some smelly animals. And let's face it, whatever refuse they've left behind. Why would God do that? I can't answer that question completely. But I do think that maybe this is a bigger story that's going on here. Let me just reframe the story. So they get to Bethlehem. Mary is very, very pregnant. They knock at the door of the inn, a place to stay. And the guy answers the door. And they say, is there any place we can stay here? And he says, I'm all filled up. And Joseph says, I need you to understand that Mary is carrying, if you will, the Son of God, the Messiah, the chosen one of all Israel. Do you think he would have said, come on in. I'll find a place. I'll go kick these people out of their room. You can have that room. I want the Messiah to be born in my house. But the thing, he doesn't know any of that. If there is a lesson to be learned, it's a story of missed opportunities. It's a story of a missed opportunity that caused Jesus to be born in a manger and not a crib. There are many missed opportunities in this life. We can miss the opportunity of helping somebody who needs help. I shared during Bible class of what really was a missed opportunity of helping somebody on the side of the road as I was traveling through a storm to get back here yesterday. Did I rationalize it? Absolutely, I did. Did I miss an opportunity? Absolutely, I did. Even if I had stopped and even if the person didn't need any help whatsoever, could my stopping simply just made their day? Could they have gone home and said, you know what? Man, I broke down on the side of the road. AAA was on its way. But there was this woman and her husband that pulled over. They had been up in Michigan. We're all in this storm together trying to get down the interstate. They pulled in behind me just to see if there was anything that I could do. I had it all taken care of. But man, wasn't that nice of them? I missed the opportunity. See, my question, again, I don't want it to be negative. My question is how many missed opportunities are there in life? How many times do I need to offer more than the stables of my life when instead I should offer the room of my heart as the inn? Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15, 16, and 17. Make this as a statement. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise. And here's verse 16. It's the phrase that gets translated many different ways. Making the best use of the time because the days are evil. Some translations say making the most of every opportunity. The technical wording is redeem the time, okay? Buy back, if you will, the time. It is make every moment count. It is as if Paul would say, stop what you're doing right now and look for the good that can be done because evil is all around this world. That's the essence of what is being said here. Do I think the innkeeper is bad? I do not. Do I think it was benevolent and kind of him to say, look, she's pregnant. I'm not kicking you out. I don't have any room. I've got where my animals are stabled here at the house. It's not much. You can have that. I probably actually go down that road. I think he's far more benevolent than what we probably make him out to be. But had he known the Messiah was going to be born, would there have been room in the inn? And I believe with all of my heart the answer is yes. Had I known that was Jesus laying underneath the car trying to fix whatever it was in the cold wind yesterday driving back, would I have stopped, moved everything that was in my car and said, Jesus, just come warm yourself up. I'll sit here and wait with you till AAA gets here. Absolutely. The missed opportunities are not so much because we don't create good opportunities. I think it's because the opportunities that God has already created for us are overlooked. The opportunity is there. I don't have to go create the opportunity, is my point. I don't have to go create some place to do good. God's done that. Are the days evil? Yes. Is the world around us unjust, unfair, has a tremendous amount of negative? Yes. So Paul steps in and says, then buy back, redeem the time, make the most of every opportunity. That is a high calling, I think, for us. When you're in line at a store and it's already taking forever because it is the time of year, whatever the case may be, the checkout lines are forever. They either want you to go do it yourself and they didn't teach you how to do that, or the lines for the people that are there are so far long, you've been waiting and waiting. Do you ever get a little frustrated at the store? And again, maybe it's just me. But when you finally get to check out, and then the dumb scanner doesn't work right, does it just push you just a little bit over the edge? And in honesty, are there ever times when that has been visible to somebody around you? Did you just miss an opportunity? My point is, there are so many times that God's already created the right bad thing for you to turn into his good thing. I've been challenged in many ways in this small discipling group that I have with a couple of guys here. And part of the thing that we challenge is how we as men can do better with our families and our spouses and our children and those that we come around. Blessing doesn't always have to be a stranger, is my point. Sometimes the no room in the inn sign, it's with your spouse, with your kids, with somebody that, yes, you love, but frankly, you're frustrated with. And instead of working to put Jesus into the process, you just take over. And you say, there's no room here. Wally was a seventh grade student who was bigger than any of the other kids in his class. Wally had a mother who was an alcoholic. And she was an alcoholic during the pregnancy. And Wally was born with some disabilities due to what his mom was like during the pregnancy. He didn't catch on as quickly as other kids. His physical size happened to be larger than many of the other kids. And because he had a little bit more hard time, maybe even frankly a lot more hard time grasping some of the concepts, it seemed like everybody always had to help Wally get through whatever the situation was. He went to a fairly good-sized church, and they decided that that particular year they were going to actually do the birth of Jesus play, the Christmas play. And of course, everybody had all the different parts, but they wanted to include all the kids because you need to do that, especially at Sunday school. You got to include everybody. And the question is, what do you do with Wally? I mean, he never remembers lines. He's like a giant compared to everybody else. And so it was almost like a snap of the finger. He would make a great innkeeper. He doesn't have to hardly say a thing. And the way they were putting on that play, the innkeeper was a little bit more on the gruff side. So the play is going on, and Joseph and Mary get down to Bethlehem, and the two kids that are playing Joseph and Mary, they come to the door of the inn there in Bethlehem, and they knock on the door, and Wally opens the door, and all of his bluster goes, "What do you want?" And Joseph said, "We've traveled a long way, and my wife is pregnant, and we just need a place to stay. Can we stay at your inn?" Wally's silent. Wally had forgotten the next words. He had practiced "what do you want" so much he had that part down, but nothing else was working. Off stage, you could hear this wonderful lady trying to coach him, to tell him, "Go away." And all of a sudden he goes, "Be gone." And Mary says, "But I'm pregnant. Isn't there any place I can stay?" And again, Wally's at a total loss. And you can hear from behind the curtain, "You can stay in the barn." And Wally just looks and he says, "You can have my room." Let me ask you just a question as we close. Which story was better that day? The one that you expected at the church Christmas play? Or what Wally did? What lesson got driven home that day? You can have my room. So let me ask you, when Jesus comes to you and he's knocking at the door of your heart, wanting to come in and dine with you, what do you say? "I'll take part of you. You can have the barn. I'll have you on Sunday. But Monday through Saturday, I get me. On Sunday, I'll dress up and I'll take you and we'll go to church." Or do you say, "You can have my room. You can have my life. Come on in. I need you, not you need me." What better lesson can we take away than a seventh grade boy who struggled in life that just simply says, "You can have my room"? I doubt there was any sermon preached better than Wally's. Except for yours. You get to write this story now. Jesus is amongst us. Jesus does come to us. Jesus does want to live with you, in you. You get to decide. Is it begone or is it come in? That choice you get to make. And if we can help you make that choice, then won't you come as we stand and as we sing?